Podcast, the source for James Madison sports news and conversation from the Daily Newsroom. Now here's Shane Bentley and Katie Harper.
Well, another huge week of JMU sports is upon us here at the Purple and Bold Podcast. We've got plenty to talk about, you know, basically across the board sports-wise. Start with a little JMU baseball as they continue to roll, getting some votes in national polls. I think I saw RPI in the 30s right now. It's probably about as strong as JMU baseball has set in a long time.
Yeah, it was kind of funny last night after the game against VMI. We were talking with pitcher Donovan Burke, and he had told us a few weeks ago, he's like, you know, I've been here for half a decade. And then last night he talked about it. He's like, I was reading up. This is the best start the program has had a really long time. It's the best start since I've been here. So they're all pretty excited. Eikenberry last night after the game, we talked to him about receiving some votes, and he kind of laughed. And he's like, you know, I'm really superstitious. He's like, it's cool to get recognized, but he's like, still early in the season, and, you know, I would rather see those start coming later in the year.
Yeah, and, you know, it's – in some ways it's not that much different than maybe a typical February, March for JMU, because they play a lot of these weekend series against teams that you expect them to win the series at the very least, if not sweep them. But I think, you know, being competitive and getting a win at Arkansas, then beating Virginia Tech, like, I think that probably changes – the way people are looking at these other series when you continue to get sweeps, not just, you know, taking 2 or 3 or something, you continue to get sweeps and you got a winning streak going. I think, you know, those early games really kind of have to change the way you look at the more recent games.
From what I was hearing, the perspective going into all of these games at home, it was definitely to win the series and win these, like, standalone midweek games. But I think Eikenberry said numerous times, he's like, it's so hard to sweep in college baseball, regardless of who you're playing. You saw it the first week of the season. Arkansas, everybody from the outside perspective probably thought Arkansas could easily get a 4-game sweep against JMU. But what does JMU do? They take one, they cancel out the sweep. And I think that also probably put it in Eikenberry's head of like, okay, remember, just because we're playing teams that maybe aren't as good as us, it is so hard to get that sweep, whether it's 3 games or 4 games. And for JMU to do it in the way that they've done it, they've gotten run support time and time again. They've had some uphill battles. You know, they've gone down in a few of these games, and yet come ninth inning, they find a way to get it done. And I think their confidence is really, really starting to grow. And I think they're starting to realize that Fenwick Trimble said it over the weekend. He's like, you know, when we beat Arkansas, it was something that really showed us that we can hang with anybody. We can beat anyone.
Yeah. The run support, I think, is like a huge key when it comes to getting the sweeps, because you're not always going to have the pitching. Even when you have a great staff, you're going to have games where, like, they just don't have it, or, you know, somebody's tired, or you overuse somebody, or, you know, your bullpen's not necessarily available later in the week. And to be able to kind of count on having, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 runs most of the time, I think takes a lot of pressure off that pitching staff to be able to perform on a weekly or a weekend's basis, where we're talking about trying to cobble together 3 games in 3 days.
Something that's also really helped them with the run support is that they've had Coleman Calabrese down in the 5th spot of their order. And he had kind of an off night last night. He only got on base once with the walk. But up until that point, it seemed like every time he came to the plate, it was a single, double. He had, like, everything was going right for him. He had a bunt that ended up being a triple in a way, because he got to third off of it with some errors. So with his presence at the plate, it's just been, they have this support down the lineup where, you know, Trimble was the lone player from JMU that was on the preseason All Sunbelt team, and he hasn't even had a bad start to the year. I think he has the second best batting average right now behind Calabrese, but Calabrese has been that good and that just kind of eye catching of like, wow, this guy can perform, and he's giving run support all the way down in the 5th spot.
Yeah, like you said, you know, Trimble was the preseason All Conference guy. They've had some other guys that, you know, over the course of last year, coming into this year, probably were as talked about or more talked about than Calabrese. But, you know, that start has been particularly awesome for him. And, you know, to see a guy really kind of put it together at the plate and go through a streak like this, you can't expect this maybe every time out throughout the entire season. But to get this kind of start has got to do wonders for his confidence and just kind of like you said, for what they expect from the depth of the lineup and the order.
Eikenberry has been really happy with his performance too. I think Eikenberry was like, this is what you expect out of a guy that's been with the program for several years now. He started kind of as a rotational guy that would play occasionally. And then last year and then into this year now, he's being looked at as he's going to start every game if he's healthy. And they expect some big things out of him.
Yeah, and we record this on Wednesday afternoon. We have not seen any bad weather yet in Harrisonburg, but the game for Wednesday was preemptively postponed. Knowing that they're not going to play Richmond here this week, take me through, I guess, what's coming up, what to expect from the next week or so of JMU baseball.
They're on the road one last time before conference play starts. It's been a while. They go for a weekend series down at East Tennessee. And East Tennessee is, I think it's going to be an interesting one. East Tennessee, they've had some rough games this year in terms of they were playing some really, really high caliber opponents. So I think they're excited to get back on the road. Eikenberry did kind of, and he was like, you know, I'd rather play all of my non-conference games at home, but that's not really going to be realistic. So I think they're ready to get on the road. I think it's another one that realistically they can sweep. I think winning the series obviously is probably what their mindset is in or is on going into it, because again, like, they have this series and then they have two games at home next week in the middle on Tuesday and Wednesday against Niagara, and then you're facing arguably your biggest test since the first week of the season when you played Arkansas when you open up Sun Belt play against Coastal Carolina.
Yeah, I think that series is an interesting one and a good one for JMU. Like, if you're looking at where they are right now, they've got that win streak going. They want to try to keep that going down there, but you do get on the road. You do get to kind of get out of your comfort zone a little bit, but it's also not, it's not a 12-hour bus ride to get there, which, you know, sometimes college baseball teams have to do. So, you know, I like that aspect of the scheduling for them to kind of mix that one in here before conference play.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a good test too for just some of, I think the pitching has been interesting so far this season. I think you've had guys who have gone out and had really good showings, and then maybe the next showing they regress a little bit. So I think having that tough of an opponent right out of the gate in the Sun Belt will just definitely almost help them settle down and be like, okay, let's get back into the rhythm of these things. Like, we need to perform well in the Sun Belt play. While yes, it's great that we did really, really well during non-conference, you know, the Sun Belt play is realistically what's going to determine if there's postseason baseball for them.
Yeah, from what you've seen of JMU baseball so far, does it change the way you look at the Sun Belt race from a JMU perspective, or just, you know, where you think they can fit into this conference?
I think the 10th place preseason ranking is low now after kind of seeing the start of this year. I think realistically, you can't really expect them to be maybe in the top three or four, but I think 5, 6, 7, that's honestly an easy place I think they could reach. I think when the season got started, there was so much kind of clutter in the middle of the Sun Belt rankings where everybody was kind of close, that I think the start of the season can really, really propel JMU to capitalize on that and get back kind of up higher in the Sun Belt rankings.
Yeah, and I do wonder kind of how they start in Sun Belt play will affect them going forward. Like you said, they're rolling with so much confidence right now. They played pretty well in preseason or, you know, non-conference season last year. And then they dropped a real tough one to Coastal Carolina. Like, they were in position to win the opening Sun Belt series against Coastal, and the bullpen didn't hold up. They didn't get some of the run support, and they were still right there just a couple plays away from taking a series against Coastal that I think probably would have changed the dynamic of the rest of the Sun Belt series. So I'm really curious to see how they can open up conference play, because last year it just seemed like that sort of not derailed things, but it took some luster off what they'd done previously, you know, beating up on, you know, overmatched teams a lot in non-conference play. But yeah, I think that first Sun Belt series is going to be kind of a key to, like, just where they are mentally going forward.
The bullpen is going to be what wins or loses some of these games, I think, especially once they get into the thick of the schedule. There have been good outings from the bullpen. I think there's been a lot of talk surrounding the freshman Jackson Logar. He's looked really good in most of his outings. He has struggled a few times. Jaden Kinsler is someone who I think has really kind of grown into the season. He had a rough first outing. He was part of the pitching staff that went out in the game that they got run ruled by Arkansas. Since then, he's had some really good outings. He went 5 innings in one game in relief. He went 4 in the next, and he was striking out several. Eikenberry was honest yesterday where in non-conference play, he was wanting to see his pitchers kind of work out of jams, and so he left them in arguably longer than he probably would if they were in a conference game. I think last night a perfect example was top of the 9th inning. They have T.R. Williams on the mound, and bases are loaded with 2 outs. And he was warming up Logar in the pin, but he wanted to see if Williams could get himself out of that jam. Of course, JMU did have a 4-run lead, so they had some cushion there to let him stay in and work it out, and he did work out of the inning. He got the final out with inches to spare from a grand slam. But I think from the bullpen in non-conference play, Eikenberry really has been trying to push them to see if they can find those key pitches when they need them most.
Yeah, and you certainly hit on, you know, something that these games allow them to do is, you know, you hope to have that little cushion going into the late innings and let your guys work out some stuff that, you know, will be in a little bit more pressure pack situations before too long. You know, not necessarily a pressure pack situation, but spring football is coming up very quickly. You know, we'll get our first look at, you know, Dylan Morris and some new guys at JMU, but Katie's also been taking a look at what's going to happen for JMU in the fall as far as opponents goes. First of, you know, the series of looking at opponents is who they get in the opener, Charlotte. You know, interesting, I saw somebody point out the other day, JMU, I think, leaves the Virginia, like, North Carolina region only twice next season. That, you know, they even, you know, having some road games early, the travel situation is not too bad. They'll probably have some good number of fans on the road. So you dove into Charlotte season opener. Tell me what you know about the 49ers and, you know, how that one's looking for JMU as both of those teams kind of prepare for spring ball.
It's definitely going to be a game that JMU should win and arguably should win it by a pretty good margin. Charlotte is a team that, ever since they entered the FBS, it's just everything hasn't been clicking for them. They just haven't found that coach that fits, that right winning mentality, which you can maybe even say that's partly because of, like, where they are, and you look around and there are other really good football schools nearby that can pull some people away from them recruiting-wise. So they finished last season 3-9. Was not a great season. They scored 25 total touchdowns all year, which I think they ended up ranked 123rd in the FBS for touchdowns. So have trouble scoring. They have trouble keeping people out of the end zone. They do have some returners, though. They lost their leading rusher, who was also second for passing, but they did return most of their wide receivers, including their 3 leading receivers and tight ends. So it's definitely going to be an interesting matchup. I think I said it in the article, you know, JMU still has a lot of questions throughout its roster right now just because of how many new faces there are. But in part because of the recruiting that Chesney and his staff were able to do, they brought in names that can fill those holes. They just now need practice and time to kind of figure out how to slot them all in. So I think even with all of the questions and all of the turnover that JMU has ahead of next season, by the time the end of August comes around, they're going to be probably a better football team than they were a year ago.
Yeah, I think, you know, you talk about how difficult it's been for JMU to schedule, how difficult it is to get home-and-home series against, you know, quality opponents. But they do have this game. They do have a game at UNC. And you got to love the order of things, that they get to go to Charlotte first, maybe work out some of those things that you were talking about before playing at North Carolina a couple weeks later. And, you know, if this team is as good as I think everybody in JMU fandom hopes it'll be, that North Carolina game could be winnable, and it could be those kind of games that, like, later on you're pointing to, hey, here's one of the top teams in the Sun Belt that won a game on the road in the ACC. They belong in that playoff playoff conversation.
I also think it would be huge if they can get that win against UNC a few weeks later. I know, again, like I said, it's going to be a relatively different team from a year before, but that would be two straight years with an ACC win on the road at a big football school. I mean, I know some people like to say Virginia is not a huge football school, but it is. It is ACC. So I think even that alone, even though it is two different seasons, that is something else you can point to and be like, look what our program has done every single year that we've been up at the FBS level. We've gone two straight years on the road, beaten ACC school, and then continued that kind of that hot streak of winning into Sun Belt play.
Yeah, but I think it's huge that that game's not the season opener, given the turnover in the coaching staff, the quarterback, the running back room, finding new wide receivers. Some changes on the offensive line should be pretty steady, but some changes on the offensive line, you know, a new scheme defensively, all those things. I think it's huge that that's not your season opener. To take the conversation back to Charlotte, that's a game you ought to win. It's a game you're going on the road that you got the home and home against an AAC team, and they may have not have been in that good of a conference when you scheduled them, but they are now, and that's another, you know, thing that people are going to look at down the line is, did the Sun Belt beat the American when they had the opportunity? JMU gets that one on the road. That's huge. And frankly, like, that might be close to a JMU home game when you think about,
honestly,
like,
yeah,
you know, when you think about where JMU fans are coming from, the base of fans they have in Charlotte. I mean, I think Jeff Bourne's probably going to be living in Charlotte by that point. You know, like, it's I would expect there to be at least, you know, I don't know, too early to get into percentages, but, you know, there'll be enough JMU fans there to make their presence felt in that game. That's a really good way to start out, just logistically and in terms of, like, having an opportunity to do something important that, you know, not to say it's going to be easy, but it's definitely going to be doable.
Another thing that I also think will help JMU heading into its matchup with UNC is it's also the UNC game is not the second game of the season either. They come back home and they play another team in Gardner Webb that they should win by probably an even bigger margin than the Charlotte game. And what that game I think allows too is, in especially in the second game of the season, hopefully you'll start seeing maybe some younger guys that, you know, probably aren't going to contribute this season unless there are some injuries, but it gives you that peace of mind of, like, okay, they've been on the football field at the college level, now they've played, just in case we need them come next week if something were to happen.
Yeah, and you can take that back to last year where, you know, JMU started with Bucknell, weren't particularly sharp against Bucknell. They weren't particularly sharp against UVA the next week. They, you know, frankly, were just the more talented team and were able to pull that out. But, you know, so like you said, I think the way the schedule plays out, that you get a legit FBS opponent, but one that's beatable. And then you get your home opener where you're probably hopefully getting a lot of guys to play and everything and working out some of the kinks from that first week before you then really go for the one that everybody's got circled. I think just the schedule itself works out much better this year for a team that's making a transition as far as, no more divisional transition, but a transition as far as coaching staff and personnel. I think it's going to be huge compared. I think last year's schedule could have been fairly disastrous for a team trying to do what JMU is doing as far as changing some things up.
They definitely have a favorable schedule this year, and it's going to benefit them that this is the schedule that they have with the coaching change. But at the same time, it's like it is kind of weird to call it this transition period, because you look at chatter on social media right now, and while there is a new coach, a new coaching staff, new players, the bar is already set pretty high that all of these fans and members of other media in other media markets are like, okay, yeah, they have a new roster, pretty much a new coaching staff, but, like, we're still kind of expecting to see them at the end of the season in the Sun Belt Championship game because of how well this program has been built.
Yeah, I think, you know, likely JMU and App State will be the two favorites in the East, even with everything that's changed. You know, with both programs, App State was maybe in a more similar situation to what JMU is in now. Last year, they didn't change their head coach, but they made a lot of changes on staff. They had a new quarterback, things like that. I think those two teams are going to continue to be kind of the cream of the crop in the East. And then, you know, what happens from there, we'll just have to wait and see. But, you know, we're still a couple weeks out from start of spring football. We'll dive heavily into that later this month. But right now, it's March, which means huge, huge basketball games coming up. JMU women's team, I think, is already down in Pensacola. The men's team will be in the air heading down there before we know it. I'll be heading down there tomorrow to cover the Sun Belt tournament there was a little bit of this feeling last year, but maybe for the first time in a long time, the feeling that both JMU teams have a really, really good shot at winning their conference tournament and going to the NCAA tournament.
It's been a long time, long time since that happened. And I think I know we've kind of talked about it every single week. It's just such an exciting time period, I think, for people in Harrisonburg and the student body at JMU to see this. And I think they've really embraced the basketball programs now. And so for both of them to kind of just be a couple steps away from that trophy at the end of it to then put them in March Madness, I think it's just such an exciting time period for them, for the fans, and for the community as a whole.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, last year the women were kind of expected to win it. The men were in the mix, but they were never really considered a favorite over, you know, a Southern Miss or a Marshall, who both actually ended up getting knocked out early. But then they're playing, you know, almost a road game against a South Alabama team that was really hot. And there's never that, like, sense that, like, oh, JMU's the team to beat in this one. And I wouldn't call the JMU women the team to beat this season, but I feel like they're probably, especially if they bring Susha Kozlova back, I feel like they're probably the one behind Marshall that has to be probably the team most people would pick. Troy's there too, but, you know, JMU knocked off Marshall already. When they're healthy, I think they're about as good as anybody in the conference. When they're healthy and when they're clicking, they've had some moments where there's been like a little bit of a letdown this season, but I feel like the women going into this are playing about as confidently as they have in a while. They've won four of their last five. They finished the regular season very strong down at ODU. That was one of their best performances of the season, and that's a good one to give you a little bit of momentum going into the conference tournament against a team you know that's probably going to be there in the semifinals too.
Yeah, I think one of the things too with the women's program, if and when they meet Marshall, the more that they've faced Marshall, I think the better that they've gotten. It's a unique press, obviously. It was one when Marshall came to Harrisonburg. They weren't necessarily, I mean, they were prepared for it. They tried working on it. But I remember Coach O saying, like, yeah, we didn't handle that well at all. And then they go to Marshall the next week, and they handle it much better, and they win on the road. So I think time and the number of times that they've played Marshall definitely will benefit them if they do meet up with them in the Sun Belt tournament. But yeah, to end the season the way they did with the injuries that they have faced, I think that's definitely a really, really big momentum push when they get into these critical games.
Yeah, and if we're diving into the possibility of a rubber match between JMU and Marshall, you know, Marshall's press is a big deal, and it's tough to handle. But like you said, JMU did a much better job of that. Part of the reason they did a better job is because, you know, if you don't let them score, it's harder for them to set up their press. They still do. They still try to pressure full court off a miss, but it's harder to get it set up. And JMU switched that zone defense in Huntington. They've played it again other times this season. They played 40 minutes of zone at ODU, which is absolutely unheard of for a Sean O'Regan team. I think they've got to be even more comfortable with the fact that they might mix that up, and that might be the key to beating Marshall and possibly some other teams. I mean, it really threw ODU off. And JMU's a good enough rebounding team that they're able to play a little zone. And if they're getting stops, they can sacrifice maybe some of the rebounds. I think that might be the real thing that could end up being a little bit of a difference maker. They just look like a completely different team defensively the last two games. They're blocking shots because they're getting help from the offside in the zone. Like, they're just doing things defensively that they hadn't done all year, and they're doing it right at the right time.
I mean, yeah, there's no better time for you to start doing it than right now. So I think there's definitely confidence there. And I think it's good to see the confidence out of them with the injuries that they've had. Again, like we've talked about, you know, losing Kozlova and Bristow, while Bristow isn't a starter, brings a certain energy to every single time she's on the court. So to have kind of this really, really good streak where you're missing some key players is definitely going to help them once this postseason tournament gets going.
Yeah, and I mean, quite honestly, they did get Heaven Bristow back last week, who helped, made a big difference, and gives them some depth off the bench, a really good defensive presence. But quite honestly, like a week and a half ago, I kind of thought without Kozlova, who may or may not play in the conference tournament, but without her, they probably had no shot at winning it. Now, after, you know, three or four games of, well, actually five games really of Anna Goodman playing really, really well. And they're getting good minutes at the backup five from Mekhiah Tynes. I feel differently. I feel like, you know, they definitely would be helped, aided by Susha Kozlova coming back. But I also feel like, you know, they're a team now that if they get the right breaks, they could potentially win it without her. And, you know, then that it gives you another week and a half before you play in the NCAA tournament if, you know, you can win it without her. I'm looking at them much differently after last week than I was 2 weeks ago.
Well, I still think back to the first game that Kozlova was out and Goodman had just, she started and had this unbelievable first quarter. She ended the quarter leading the team in points and I want to say rebounds too, but I could be wrong. And she looked great. And then for the rest of the game, she was dormant. They lost. And so I think, like you said, getting Goodman going and getting her playing well and consistently throughout all four quarters of the game, it does kind of lessen the blow of Kozlova being out. Of course, like, if you ask the team, they're going to want her there. I mean, she's that big of a key player. But I think Goodman especially has really, really helped kind of this team get on that win streak.
Yeah. Over on the men's side, you know, JMU goes in as the number two seed. Technically, you know, if you look at Vegas, if you look at the analytical websites that, you know, predict everything out, they're the favorites to win the conference tournament. App State, obviously, the number one seed. And, you know, we talk about, you know, the possibility of JMU Marshall on the women's side. I think everybody's kind of, you know, looking, is it going to be another JMU App State game in a championship on the men's side? Obviously, lots of things can happen, but, you know, basically everything that analyzes this tells us that's the most likely championship game. And I think would have to be the biggest JMU basketball game in decades if it happens.
Probably.
I'm trying to think. You know, yeah. You know, I mean, I think when they won the CAA tournament in 2013, that was, you know, a big championship game. But, you know, there wasn't – that team wasn't great throughout the season. They were good but not great. They really got together later in the season, but they knew they were going to be a 16 seed. They knew they weren't going anywhere in the NCAA tournament. Like, whoever wins the JMU App game, if it happens, has a shot to make a run in the NCAA tournament, not just get there, but probably only one's making it. I mean, I go back. I mean, is it as big as 93 when JMU plays ODU in the championship game and it's a rivalry and it's the program's kind of in really good shape? I wonder if you have to go back that far to find a game as meaningful for JMU basketball, if it happens, which, you know, lots of things could happen, but it just feels like it's destined to happen.
Yeah, it's just like so weird to for this program to say, like, do we have to go back to 1993 to find the most meaningful game before this one? And it's just sitting here, I'm like, that's, you know, several years before I'm born. I'm like, that's how this team has kind of had to go through some slumps in many people's lifetime. Like, most of these, I mean, yeah, all of these guys, they're all on the team. They weren't alive in 93 either. You know, these are, it's been a long time coming for JMU basketball and men's basketball. And I think, I know a lot of JMU fans right now are living by this idea, if JMU and App State meet in the title game or wherever, that, you know, it's hard to beat a team three times in a season. And it's like, realistically, yes, that is kind of the saying, and it is does prove to be true often. But I think, I don't think that's necessarily going to play into how a game ends. I think one thing that really will, is I think all of these guys know that, like, yeah, whoever wins the Sun Belt is probably going to be the lone person representing the conference in the NCAA tournament. And I think a lot of these guys for JMU, they want to win that game. And you can say the same for App State's players too, and they want to win that game just the same. So I think it would make such an amazing conference championship game, whatever it is. And I think it would, yeah, I can't think of a time that there's been a bigger basketball game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it just, you know, now that we talk this much about it, they'll probably both be gone before the semifinals or something. But like
100%. We just jinxed both of them. Sorry, guys.
But it just feels like it's a game that's got to happen. There's been in less than 2 years since they got into the conference together. Like, just think about like what we've gotten out of JMU and App State as a rivalry that's building. They go on the road in football and like rip each other's hearts out, like
unreal performances.
Yeah, and like games that like mattered so much to both teams at the time, and you know, really just heartbreaking losses at home for each of them. They traded, you know, home and home. They beat each other on the road in basketball last year in games that were pretty big, and then the regular season basketball games this year have been so huge. It just feels like this is where the Sun Belt is heading, to having a JMU App State game with this kind of stakes, because even the football games, they were so meaningful. The stakes in some ways weren't as high.
Yeah, they technically, I would say in football they weren't as high, because regardless, everybody knew that JMU, even if JMU beat App State this year, they weren't going to the Sun Belt title game because of kind of everything going on with the transition period. But I think it's such a fun, for it to be not just JMU and App State in basketball and JMU and App State in football. It's pretty much going across all of the sports right now where there is this rivalry budding between App State and JMU. And it's really, really exciting to witness it. Like, I remember when the switch came and they announced that they were joining the Sun Belt, there was a part of me that's like, wow, you're losing this rivalry with Richmond that you've had in football for years. Like, you know, you get to campus as a freshman and you instantly learn like Richmond is rivalry week. And it's, I thought when they made the switch, it was going to take some time to kind of get that level of a rivalry again. But with the history that JMU has with App State, the rivalry has been quick to grow again. And I know I've seen chatter on social media of some App State fans refusing to say that JMU is their rival. And it's like, I think at this point, they just need to kind of admit it. JMU and App State are quickly becoming one of the, I think, top rivalries in the Sun Belt. And it's definitely going to be a fun one to keep watching as the years go by.
Yeah, and I mean, I get it from an App State perspective. As, you know, the Georgia Southern one in particular goes back so long. They've been in the conference together longer. There's history, and I think it's a real hatred there. Yeah. Where I don't know if it's a real hatred between JMU and App State, but just when you look at JMU and App State, even compared to like JMU and Richmond, if you want to say that was JMU's biggest rival before, JMU and App State, they're such similar schools. They're in such similar locations. They're two athletic departments that are dedicated to putting themselves into these situations where they're going to play big games in multiple sports. And, like, I just think it's not even forcing it for it to be a rival. It's just there's so much in common, and they're doing things the same way on so many levels that we're just going to continue to see big games between these teams that are, you know, 4 hours apart, and it's going to continue to go this way as far as like a rivalry developing.
Yeah, you said it too. Like, the fact that these schools just have similar locations in the mountains, it's just so wild. Like, they are, like, I feel like this perfect fit to be rivals at some point, whether it needs to grow in the eyes of App State fans or not. But I think I think rivalries like that, whether they're new, old, whatever it may be, that's what makes sports fun. Like, that, I love watching rivalries in sports. That's one of the reasons I got into sports. So to see this kind of grow as quickly as it has, and again, like, I know there's history between JMU and App State from years ago, but to see how it was reborn so quickly with a new generation of JMU fans and JMU students has been really, really cool.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just so different, too, like, compared to the CAA, where you go out in Virginia and you see App State sweatshirts. And I'm sure if you're in North Carolina, like if you live in Charlotte or whatever, you see JMU sweatshirts and you're an App State alum, like as composed to, and you're playing them in every sport as compared to the CAA, where it's like, you know, I go to holidays like Thanksgiving with, you know, the whole entire table besides me is Delaware alums, and they're not talking anything about JMU or like CAA sports or anything like that. Like, I mean, it just didn't exist in that conference really anymore. Even I feel like the Richmond thing was pretty one-sided on JMU's part because they didn't care about football and they were in a completely different conference than everything else.
Yeah. The passion is just, I think the passion is drastically different in the Sun Belt than what it was in the CAA. Obviously when JMU was in the CAA, the fans were passionate here. Mm-hmm. Like the fans in Harrisonburg have always been really passionate regardless of what conference their team is in. But I think it's special and it's good for the athletic program now to be in a conference where all of the other schools share that same level of love and passion for their sports and want to win just as much as JMU fans do.
Yeah, you just don't see diehard Elon or Drexel fans out in the wild. Like, it just doesn't happen.
I mean, because you even look at, like, the CAA. Football, you had Villanova, but what are Villanova fans usually known for? And it's, like, being basketball fans, not a CAA school there. So it's nice to see it where the majority of the Sun Belt teams play each other in not just football, but across the board in most of the sports.
Yeah. With that, we'll have plenty to talk about in the coming days. I'll do some quick hit episodes from Pensacola talking about the Sun Belt basketball tournament. So keep an eye out for those coming out, not just weekly as usual. We'll be back Wednesday for our regular weekly show, but I'll have some stuff on location from Pensacola to talk about what happens to these JMU men's and women's basketball teams. But in the meantime, you've been listening to the Purple and Bold podcast from the Daily News Record. I'm Shane Metlin talking with Katie Harper, and thank you for tuning in.